Hello, this is Ryan George from the thing you're currently watching. Please enjoy this pitch meeting for Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a movie that, interestingly enough, has a co-directing credit by none other than Jon Bon Jovi, which not a lot of people know about because it's not true and that didn't happen. You can just make things up and say them. So I hope you enjoy that, and while you watch that, I'm gonna draw Indiana Jones in a fridge.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. Do you remember how the last Indiana Jones movie ended?
Sure, he rode off into the sunset. It was a great way to say bye to the character.
It sure was, sir. Perfect ending, in fact. So I thought we could bring him back.
Is that really such a good idea? Kind of feels like we should leave the character be, you know? I mean, what if we mess it up?
Well, I mean, what if money, though?
That's a good point. Yeah, no, I'm interested.
Great.
So how does this thing start?
Well, I figure a cool way to start would be to show a prairie dog that was clearly made on a computer.
What?
And then we're gonna see Indiana Jones, but it's 1957 now, so he's old.
Right, because of how time works?
Exactly, yeah. So he's been captured by this evil Soviet lady, Irina, and her soldiers.
Okay.
And they want help finding this dead alien that's being kept inside a government warehouse.
Wow, and how does he find it?
Well, these aliens have skulls that are, like, magnetic when I need them to be for the plot.
What do you mean?
Well, sometimes people's guns get stuck to them so Indy can escape, but usually they just sit around and do nothing.
Oh, very cool.
So anyway, thanks to magnetism, Indy helps them find this alien, but then he escapes.
Wow, so where does he go?
Well, he finds himself in a nuclear test village with a bomb that's about to go off in like 30 seconds.
Well, if we're gonna kill him off, that is a pretty dramatic way to do it.
Oh no, he's not gonna die.
What?
You know, he goes inside this fridge, right? And because it's lined with lead, he survives a massive explosion, insanely high temperatures, crazy amounts of radiation, and being launched like 100 feet into the air and violently bouncing around several times. So I don't really understand anything about science, but if I'm understanding correctly, lead is magic.
Lead is magic, yeah, that's right.
Wow, 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 wow.
So then Indy goes back home, but he gets fired from his job because now the FBI thinks he's a communist.
Oh, so he's on a watch list and stuff?
Yeah, super serious stuff. So then Indy gets on a train and this young guy Mutt shows up and he's like, I need your help.
How did he know Indy was gonna be on that train?
Oh, extremely unclear.
Oh, okay.
So Mutt tells Indy that his mom and this Professor Oxley guy were kidnapped and they were looking for a crystal skull.
Okay.
So Mutt and Indy fly down to the Amazon together.
Isn't he being watched by the FBI?
He sure is, but apparently that doesn't affect travel in any way.
Oh, well, good.
So they go track down this crystal skull, but this dude pops out and let me tell you, he's got one of those poison dart blowy things.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so Indy pops out and he blows the dart backwards into the guy's mouth, so he gets poisoned.
What? Is it a double-sided dart?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I just thought it'd be cool.
It does sound cool.
So then they get the skull, but then they get picked up by the Soviet bad guys.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and then we meet Mutt's mom, and it turns out it's Marion Ravenwood from the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it turns out her and Indy are still in love, and Mutt is their son.
Wow, okay. Yeah, no, sure. I feel nothing.
Oh, okay. I was kind of hoping for a bigger reaction.
No, nope.
Okay, so anyway, now they're rolling through the jungle, and in front of all the cars, there's this tree-cutting machine, and it's like making a road for them.
Very cool.
But then Indy shoots the thing with a rocket, and that leads to this huge car chase through the jungle.
How is there a chase through the jungle if he blew up the thing that makes roads?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
So this car chase is gonna go on for super long. Like, Mutt's gonna have a big sword fight with Irina, the skull is gonna switch hands like a bunch of times.
Very exciting.
But then Mutt's gonna get stuck in some vines.
Uh-oh, so he's out of the chase?
Actually, no, because he immediately bonds with some monkeys and then swings on some vines and catches up.
He swings faster than speeding vehicles.
That's what we're going with. And now that he's friends with the monkeys, they attack the bad guys.
Oh, monkeys that know which characters are the protagonists are tight.
They sure are. So anyway, then all the cars get to this cliff.
Oh man, it's gonna be hard to get away from the bad guys with a frickin' cliff in the mix.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, Marion spotted a tree earlier, so she just drives down onto that, and then their car is also a boat.
And that works no problem?
It works with absolutely no problem. The tree even snaps back and takes out a couple of bad guys.
Wow.
But then they have to go down 3 massive waterfalls.
Uh-oh, so what do?
They go down 3 massive waterfalls.
But do they prepare in any way, or are there any consequences?
No, they just go down 3 massive waterfalls, and everything's fine.
Well, okay then.
Anyway, so eventually they get to this crazy pyramid throne room where they have to return the skull, right?
Right.
But then the bad guys catch up with them again.
And what are they trying to do?
Well, they want to return the crystal skull to the throne room.
Right, so everybody's just trying to do the same thing here.
Yep, pretty much. So then Irina puts
puts the skull onto this alien skeleton thing that's missing its head.
How did this skull get out of this room in the first place?
Unclear, but then this skeleton merges with a bunch of other skeletons and becomes an alien.
Oh, it does that, okay.
And then Irina's eyeballs turn to light and a spaceship appears from under the throne room and then it disappears into another dimension.
Okay, but what if literally anything else happened?
Well, that would probably be better, but we're gonna go with this.
Somehow that works for me.
So then everybody lives happily ever after. Indy gets married and he gets his old job back.
Well, wait, what happened with the FBI thinking he's a Soviet spy?
Well, no, everything's okay now because he saved the day.
Is there any proof that he did?
Not at all, not even a little.
But he's still off the hook?
He is, yeah, 100%.
Well, great.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, hopefully people don't think we're pushing it too much with a fourth Indiana Jones movie.
Well, I mean, I think a fourth one will be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we work on a fifth, then that's clearly a cash grab, right?
I didn't say it was going to be a full-sized Indiana Jones, so this is like a condiment-sized one. You could pick them up at most grocery stores.
Pretty convenient size. Keep him refrigerated, though.
So this movie and this pitch meeting, those are the subjects that I'm going to be doing the talking about. There might be a bit of weird background noise because my dog is wandering around. Obligatory pet cameo. He was trying to eat a fake mustache.
So rewatching this pitch meeting, but what if money line could have been the title of this entire series if it hadn't been called pitch meeting.
It is the guiding principle in show business. It's why it's called show business and not show, hey, let's just have a good time, everybody. I kind of really went in on the CGI in this pitch meeting because it was a big topic of conversation around this movie. And I just want to be clear that when I make fun of CGI, I'm hopefully it's not coming across that I'm making fun of the artists, because I do not believe that any of this is their fault. The problem, in my opinion, is an over-reliance on CGI and then not giving the artists the time and resources that they need to complete the vision that they're being forced to do. It's just they're not being given what they need to live up to the expectations. This is an impressive looking rodent. Like, it's cool that someone made that. That's a cool rodent design. But if you saw that in your backyard, you wouldn't be like, oh, there's a rodent. You'd be like, oh, all right, we do live in a simulation and the producers are starting to cut corners. I'm not gonna dive into this too much because I'm not an expert on the subject. And sometimes when you're not an expert on the subject, it's okay to just shut up for a second. But so I live in Montreal, which is where a lot of VFX companies are actually based. And so based on my limited understanding with conversations with people who actually work in the industry, this whole thing kind of works on a bidding system. So a studio will come out and be like, hey, we have a new superhero movie. There are 1,500 VFX shots. Who wants to do them? How much would you charge us? And then VFX companies are like, oh, we could do these ones for this much. That sounds pretty good, right? And then studios are like, all right, we're gonna go with these guys because they're less expensive on these shots, and then these shots with these guys over here. So if a VFX company wants to get hired, there is some incentive for them to say that it's gonna be less work than it actually is. And then that kind of lands on VFX artists to just make it work with limited hours. The artists wish this stuff could look better as well, and if they had more time, I'm sure they could make it that way, but that's just not how the system works, unfortunately, and it's pretty unfair. And that's all I'm gonna say. I'm sure there are a ton of videos on YouTube dissecting this whole industry that if you're interested, you could watch more. I'm just trying to clear up that I'm not trying to poop on the VFX artists. I'm trying to poop on the studios and the system. That's where the poop is being aimed at, and hopefully that's where the poop is hitting with minimal splatter. And I'm sorry for that imagery, but also I totally stand by that imagery. And hey, segue, speaking about an over-reliance on post-production, there is a rough editing moment in this pitch meeting that I'd like to point out, and it's this one.
He goes inside this fridge, right? And because it's lined with lead, he survives a massive explosion, insanely high temperatures, crazy amounts of radiation, and being launched like 100 feet into the air and violently bouncing around several times.
You may have caught that something's a little off there. It sounds a little weird. So here's a little behind the scenes info about what's going on there and why it doesn't quite flow well. Sometimes when I'm shooting in front of the green screen and I'm going through my lines on my phone of what I need to say next, I see that I've given myself a big chunk of text. And I think, hey, Past Ryan, I hate you so much, why'd you do this to ourselves? And I'll try to get it and I'll try to get it, but at a certain point I'm just like, you know what, Ryan from earlier today, screw you, this is not happening, your memory is not good at words. So when that happens, in the interest of just getting on with it, I'll do like a sneaky little edit a lot of the time. I'll say the first few words on camera, because I could remember 3 to 4 words at a time with my big, big brain. And then I'll read the rest of the line, and then I'll kind of cut them together and overlay a clip in editing. So done kind of well, that would look something like this. I need to go to the store later because I need to buy some lettuce, ketchup, mustard, and a tiny Indiana Jones. What that actually looks like without cutting away to footage is this. I need to go to the store later because I need to buy some lettuce, ketchup, ketchup, mustard, and a tiny Indiana Jones.
And again, what it looks like in this pitch meeting.
Inside this fridge, right? And because it's lined with lead, he survives a massive explosion, insanely high temperatures.
So yeah, that's just a little time-saving editing trick that I don't think I pulled off particularly well in this pitch meeting, and I've gotten better at during the years. Question time! Time for questions. Hey Ryan, love the show. It's hilarious. Just curious if since you've been doing pitch meetings, if you've been approached to do any comedic acting in a real TV show or movie. It does happen from time to time, but how that plays out is I'll get an email about someone excited to have me do something, and then they'll quickly realize that I'm based in Canada, and then suddenly it becomes way too much trouble to hire me, and then it's radio silence. One cool thing I did get to do, because it was voice and therefore I could just record it at home, was in the show Oddballs by The Odd Ones Out. I got to play a character in that show, Byron Sellers, and it was a really good time and really cool to see an animated character come to life with my voice.
Greased the wheels of capitalism with a lubricant called gullibility.
This question is actually in reference to the last revisited thing I did on Batman v Superman. In that one, there is some shaky cam going on in the pitch meeting. So this person asks, what's with the shaky cam in this episode, lol? Ryan experimenting with it? Back when I started doing green screen stuff, I used to put in some extra effort to try to make it seem less green screeny. Sometimes I would put a lens flare coming from a window because I was like, oh, that'll fool. And another thing I did was this handheld shaky cam. In retrospect, I was not exactly using properly. So quick description of what this is. This person, Jarl whatever, was hired on the original Deadpool movie to create kind of Adobe Premiere presets to make it seem like some of their still shots were handheld. And this Jarl individual made this publicly available. You can still download them, and I still use them from time to time. What I was doing wrong, and why some people have said, hey, you know, if the shaky cam is giving me motion sickness, is, this is getting a little technical, but I was applying the preset to a bulk of shots rather than the individual shots. And so why that kind of created a motion sickness effect that I was not intending, the vertical lines in the background would be following the same preset. So although I'm moving in the foreground, the lines are following the handheld preset and the vertical lines would follow each other from shot to shot, even though I'm changing. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what was going on, and I apologize. Contrary to popular belief, I don't want anyone vomiting when they watch my videos. Hey Ryan, how would you go about making a pitch meeting for The Room? That is something that I've been trying to crack for a long time. I would love to do it, but Just doing it normally feels off because it's such a specific Tommy Wiseau thing, but then doing a Tommy Wiseau impersonation feels wrong too, so I don't know. I hope to figure it out someday. It's one of my dreams. And once I do that, I can finally be free. I can finally be free. All right, thanks for watching. Don't forget to pick up your tiny indie at a grocery store near you and keep them refrigerated.